A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one. He's been fitting out a new rental apartment, doing an enormous amount of DIY, and he's hit that universal moment of frustration. You're halfway through a project, everything's going smoothly, and then you realize you're one screw short, one wall anchor missing, one washer that would have cost 3 cents, and now the whole job stops dead. What he's asking for is a practical, tiered inventory of fasteners and consumables. Not the giant assortment kit that gives you 47 sizes you never touch, but a curated stock of the things that actually get used. Wood screws, machine screws, wall anchors, electrical bits, rivets, the works. He wants specific sizes, specific quantities, and a framework for deciding what earns a spot in the drawer.
This is the thing that separates people who finish projects from people who spend their Saturdays in the hardware store parking lot. I've been thinking about this exact problem for years. The assortment kit is the avocado toast of the fastener world. It feels responsible in the moment, but you're paying a premium for a lot of stuff you'll never use and shortchanging yourself on the stuff you actually need.
The avocado toast of fasteners. So we're starting there.
We're starting there. Here's what most people don't realize about those big assortment kits. You get maybe 6 or 8 of each size. But the projects that use number 8 wood screws tend to use 15 or 20 of them. So you either run out immediately or you're constantly rationing. Meanwhile, you've got 47 number 4 half-inch screws that are too small for anything except eyeglass hinges. It's a terrible value proposition dressed up as convenience.
Let's step back and ask what we're actually trying to solve here. Daniel called it the last mile fastener failure. That moment when the project is 95% done and the final 5% requires a part you don't have. And the cost isn't the 10-cent screw. It's the 45 minutes, the momentum loss, the possibility that you just don't finish today.
And the solution isn't to buy everything. It's to cover the 80% case. If we can eliminate 90% of emergency hardware store runs, that's a win. The remaining 10%, some weird metric shoulder bolt for a German appliance from 1987, you're still going to the store for that. And that's fine. We're optimizing for the pattern, not the exception.
Let's talk about the framework. Daniel proposed 3 tiers. Tier 1 is the essential stuff you should buy before you even finish listening to this episode. Tier 2 is the next level, things you'll use regularly if you do more than hang pictures. Tier 3 is specialist items you buy when the project demands them. And the key distinction here is that this isn't a shopping list someone hands you. It's a decision framework. Every item earns its place by answering one question. Does this prevent enough interrupted Saturdays to justify the drawer space?
And I want to start with Tier 1 by talking about the single most commonly needed fastener in any home, the wood screw. Specifically, number 8 and number 10 deck screws. Number 8 is 4 millimeters in diameter, number 10 is 5 millimeters. You want them in 1-inch, 1.5-inch, and 2.5-inch lengths, 100 of each.
Why those sizes specifically?
Number 8 by 1-inch is your go-to for attaching thin material to thicker material. Think mounting a bracket to a stud through half-inch plywood. Number 8 by 1.5-inch is the universal wood-to-wood screw for furniture assembly, shelf brackets, cabinet work. Number 8 by 2.5-inch gets you deep into a stud for heavier loads. Number 10 steps up for door hinges, gate hardware, anything load-bearing. The 1-inch number 10 is surprisingly useful for cabinet hinges into face frames. The 1.5-inch number 10 handles most door hardware. The 2.5-inch number 10 is what you use when you really mean it. Lag screw territory without the lag screw.
You said deck screws specifically, not drywall screws.
This is one of the biggest misconceptions out there. People grab drywall screws for everything because they're cheap and they're black and they look like screws. But drywall screws are brittle. They're designed to be driven into drywall and wood studs with a drywall gun at high speed, and they have a bugle head that's shaped to dimple into drywall without tearing the paper. That same bugle head will pull right through wood if you're attaching anything with real weight. Deck screws have a flat underside to the head. a coarser thread for better holding power in wood, and they're made of tougher steel. They're also typically coated for corrosion resistance. For general household use, deck screws are the universal default.
The drywall screw is the wrong tool masquerading as the right price point.
It's the fast fashion of fasteners. Looks good on the shelf, falls apart when you actually need it.
What's next in Tier 1?
And I know you have opinions here.
But I want to hear yours first.
The nylon wall plug, the simple 8x40mm plastic cylinder with ridges, is the universal workhorse. 100 of them. They work in hollow drywall for light loads. They work in plaster. They work in brick and block and masonry. The physics is straightforward. You drill a hole, you tap the plug in, and when you drive a screw into it, the plug expands against the walls of the hole. For about 70% of hanging tasks, picture frames, light shelves, curtain rods, towel bars, this is all you need.
The load limit?
In drywall, about 15 to 20 pounds per anchor when properly installed. In masonry, significantly more, the limiting factor becomes the screw strength, not the plug. That's why the 8mm diameter is the sweet spot. 6mm plugs are too small for anything but the lightest loads. 10mm plugs require larger holes and larger screws than most household projects need.
This is where I push back a little. I've had nylon plugs fail in old drywall. The expansion mechanism depends on the drywall having enough integrity to resist the outward pressure. And in older homes or rental apartments where the walls have been patched 6 times, that integrity isn't always there. For anything over 10 pounds on drywall alone, I'd rather use a toggle bolt.
That's a completely fair point, which is why toggle bolts are in Tier 2. But the nylon plug still earns its Tier 1 spot because it's the right answer for the majority of cases. And it's also the right answer for masonry, which toggles can't touch. The point of Tier 1 isn't to cover every edge case. It's to cover the common case. And the common case is a screw into a wall plug in drywall or masonry that holds up a shelf or a picture frame without incident.
What about machine screws?
This is where Daniel's experience with flat pack furniture becomes relevant. Anyone who's assembled IKEA furniture has encountered the M4, M5, and M6 machine screw. These are the metric sizes that appear in furniture assembly, appliance panels, electronics enclosures, light fixtures, and about 80% of the threaded fasteners you'll encounter in a modern home. You want M4, M5, and M6 in 12mm and 20mm lengths, 50 of each.
Why 12 and 20?
12mm handles thin panel attachments, the back panel of a cabinet, a cover plate on an appliance. 20mm is the standard length for most structural connections in flat pack furniture. Anything longer than 20mm in these diameters is usually a specialty item for a specific application. And you want hex nuts to match. Plain hex nuts, not wing nuts, not nylock nuts. Hex nuts are the universal default. Flat washers and spring washers in matching sizes. The spring washer is the one that looks like a split ring. It prevents the nut from backing off under vibration. 50 of each size for washers.
The spring washer versus nylock distinction matters here.
Nylock nuts have a nylon insert that grips the threads and prevents loosening. They're great, but they're single use. The nylon deforms on first installation and loses effectiveness if you remove and reinstall. For general inventory where you might be assembling and disassembling things, spring washers with plain hex nuts give you reusability and adequate vibration resistance.
Far we've got wood screws, wall plugs, and machine screws with nuts and washers. What about the thing everyone has in a tangled bowl at the bottom of a drawer?
And this is where the assortment kit problem really shows itself. You see those 500-piece mixed-size packs and think you're set for life. But what you actually get is 300 of the tiny 100mm ones that are too short for anything except bundling pencils, 100 of the 200mm ones that are the size you actually use, and then a scattering of giant 300mm ones that you'll use once every 3 years. The intentional approach is to buy 100 of the 100mm size and 100 of the 200mm size, both in black UV-resistant nylon. Black because the UV stabilizer is typically carbon black, and clear or white ties will degrade in sunlight. UV-resistant because you never know when a tie is going to end up near a window or outdoors.
100 each feels like a lot.
They're cheap enough that the cost difference between 50 and 100 is negligible, and they're consumable in the truest sense. You use them once, you cut them off, they're gone. 100 is a reasonable stock that won't run out after two projects.
Last category in Tier 1, you mentioned electrical consumables.
Ferrules and heat shrink tubing. This is where Daniel's interest in electrical work shows up. Ferrules are those little metal tubes you crimp onto the end of stranded wire before inserting it into a terminal block. They prevent the individual strands from splaying out. They create a gas-tight connection, and they make the installation look professional instead of like a bird's nest. You want them in 1.0mm squared and 1.5mm squared sizes. Those cover the vast majority of household wiring from lighting circuits to appliance connections, 50 of each. You'll also need a ferrule crimping tool, but that's a one-time purchase, not an inventory item. 3mm and 6mm diameters, 1 meter of each. 3mm handles individual wire splices. 6mm handles bundled connections or larger gauge wire. Heat shrink isn't just cosmetic. It provides strain relief and insulation at the splice point, and it prevents the corrosion that eventually causes intermittent connections. For anyone who's ever chased a flickering light fixture back to a corroded wire nut from 1983, heat shrink feels like civilization.
That's Tier 1. Wood screws, wall plugs, machine screws with hardware, cable ties, ferrules, heat shrink. What does this actually cost?
Somewhere around $60 to $80 total, depending on where you shop and whether you catch a sale. That's less than two emergency hardware store runs when you factor in time and gas. The return on investment is immediate. The first project you finish without leaving the house pays for the entire inventory.
Let's move to Tier 2. This is the stuff for people who do more than hang pictures and assemble furniture.
First up, self-tapping sheet metal screws, number 8 and number 10.5 inch and 3/4 inch lengths. These are for attaching metal to metal, ductwork, electrical boxes, brackets, and metal to wood, like drywall, corner bead clips, or junction box covers. The important distinction here is between self-tapping and self-drilling. Self-tapping screws create their own threads in a pre-drilled hole. Self-drilling screws have a little drill bit tip and can punch through thin metal without a pilot hole. For general stock, get self-drilling. They're slightly more expensive, but they eliminate the step of drilling pilot holes in sheet metal, which is tedious and requires a drill bit you probably don't have in exactly the right size.
The half-inch versus 3/4-inch choice.
Half-inch handles thin sheet metal. Think HVAC ductwork, electrical panel covers, appliance housings. 3/4-inch gives you enough length to go through sheet metal and bite into wood behind it, which is the common case for mounting electrical boxes to framing, 50 of each size. The TAPCON style, that's the blue ones with the aggressive thread. 1/4-inch diameter, 1.25 inch, and 2-inch lengths. These are for attaching things directly to concrete, brick, or block without a wall plug. The screw cuts its own threads into the masonry. But here's the critical detail that people get wrong. You must drill the hole with a hammer drill and the correct bit size. For 1/4-inch TAPCONs, that's a 5/32 inch bit. If you use a regular drill, the hole won't be round enough. If you use the wrong bit size, the screw either won't bite or it'll snap off. The bit usually comes in the box with the screws, but don't lose it.
Why stock both concrete screws and wall plugs? Don't they overlap?
They address different scenarios. Wall plugs are for light to medium loads where you're using a standard screw, you drill a hole, tap in the plug, drive the screw. Concrete screws are for heavier loads or situations where you want a direct mechanical connection to the masonry without an intermediate plastic part that could degrade over time. Think mounting a TV bracket to a concrete wall. You could use wall plugs and lag screws, but 1/4-inch TAPCONs are faster, stronger, and more reliable, 50 of each length.
For drywall specifically, you mentioned toggle bolts in Tier 2.
Toggle bolts, also called butterfly anchors. 1/8 inch and 1/4 inch sizes. These are for heavy loads on hollow drywall where a nylon plug would pull out. The mechanism is elegant. You drill a hole, the toggle folds flat against the bolt, you push it through, and it springs open behind the drywall. The load is distributed across a much larger surface area than an expansion plug. A properly installed 1/4-inch toggle bolt can hold 50 pounds or more in 1/2-inch drywall, 20 of each size.
When should someone use a toggle versus a molly bolt versus a nylon plug?
Nylon plug for anything under 20 pounds. Molly bolt for 20 to 50 pounds. Mollies have a sleeve that expands behind the drywall when you tighten them, creating a larger bearing surface than a plug but smaller than a toggle. Toggle bolt for anything over 50 pounds, or anything where failure would be catastrophic, Large mirrors, heavy shelves, grab bars. The downside of toggles is that if you remove the bolt, the toggle falls into the wall cavity and you can't reuse it. Mollies are removable and reusable. So for something you might want to reposition, like a shelf bracket, mollies have an advantage. For a permanent installation at maximum strength, toggles win.
But what about nails?
16-gauge finish nails in 18mm and 40mm lengths for trim work and light carpentry. These are thin enough to not split the wood, but strong enough to hold baseboards, door casing, and small moldings. And 50mm common nails. That's 2 inches for framing and rough work. I don't recommend stocking brads or pin nails unless you have a nail gun. They're too small to hammer by hand effectively. They bend if you look at them wrong. A small box of each size is plenty.
The last tier 2 item?
3.2mm aluminum rivets. That's 1/8 inch in 6mm and 10mm grip ranges. These are for attaching metal to metal when you can't access the backside. Gutters, downspouts, brackets, license plates, metal furniture repair. The grip range is the thickness of the materials the rivet can join. 6mm grip handles 2 thin sheets of metal. 10mm grip gives you more flexibility for thicker assemblies. You'll need a hand riveter that costs about $15 to $20, and it's a tool that will last a lifetime for household use. 50 of each grip range.
The gutter downspout is the perfect case study here. A rivet and a hand riveter turns a 30-minute frustration into a 2-minute fix. And the rivet costs what, 5 cents?
The economics of fasteners are almost insulting when you compare the part cost to the time cost of not having it.
Right, tier 3. The specialist stuff. Let's run through it quickly.
Cable clips, also called P-clips, in 6mm and 10mm sizes. These are for routing cables along walls or inside cabinets. They have a rubber lining that protects the cable and a screw hole for mounting. Buy them when you need them. They're project-specific. Masonry anchors, sleeve anchors, and wedge anchors for heavy loads and concrete. If you're mounting a safe to a concrete floor or installing a structural post, these are what you want. But they're not general inventory. Buy them for the project. Threaded inserts, also called rivet nuts or nutserts, for creating machine threads in thin metal or plastic. If you're building something with aluminum extrusion or need to bolt into a material that can't be tapped, these are invaluable. But again, buy them when the project demands them.
That's the framework. Tier 1 covers the everyday. Tier 2 covers the regular, but not daily. Tier 3 is on demand.
What does this actually cost, and how do you keep it from becoming a mess? The Tier 1 inventory is about $60 to $80. Tier 2 adds maybe another $40 to $60. So for somewhere around $100 to $140, you've eliminated 90% of hardware store emergencies. That's less than the cost of 2 or 3 wasted Saturday afternoons.
The organization principle is where most people fail. They buy all this stuff and then dump it in a coffee can.
Don't sort by size, sort by category. Screws in one section, anchors in another, electrical in another, and then by type within each category. A small parts organizer with 24 to 32 compartments is ideal. They cost $15 to $25. Label everything immediately. I cannot stress this enough. The phrase, "I'll remember what this is a lie you tell yourself. You won't remember. In 6 months, an M5x12 and an M5x20 will look identical. Label the drawer, label the compartment, write the size and quantity on a piece of tape if you have to.
The replenishment rule?
When you use the last of any item, add it to a shopping list immediately, not when you're at the store next week, not when you need it again. This is the single most important habit for maintaining the inventory. The system only works if the drawer is stocked when you open it.
The other thing Daniel mentioned is that the inventory should evolve. What you actually use versus what you thought you'd use.
The 80-20 check. After 6 months, look at what you've actually consumed. Anything in Tier 1 that hasn't been touched, move it to Tier 3, you clearly don't need it on hand. Anything in Tier 2 that you've used 3 times, move it to Tier 1. It's earned the real estate. The inventory should reflect your actual projects, not an idealized version of what you think you might build someday.
The system isn't static. It's a living inventory that adapts to the work you actually do.
And that's the difference between a curated inventory and a hoard. A hoard is aspirational. It's full of fasteners for projects you might do. An inventory is practical. It's full of fasteners for projects you actually do.
That's the system. But we're just scratching the surface here. Daniel mentioned follow-up episodes diving deep into each tier, and I think that's worth doing. The organization systems alone could be a full episode, plus the whole metric versus imperial question.
The metric versus imperial thing is genuinely interesting right now. In household DIY, metric is increasingly dominant. Most furniture hardware is metric. Most appliances are metric. Even American-made electrical components are increasingly metric. You can cover 95% of household cases with metric fasteners alone. The only place imperial still dominates is construction lumber and some plumbing fittings.
The practical advice is, pick metric as your default. Keep a small imperial selection if you work on older American homes, and don't try to maintain full inventories of both.
And that's the kind of nuance we can dig into in a follow-up.
The final thought I keep coming back to is this. A curated inventory is a form of respect for your own time. Every time you open that drawer and find exactly the fastener you need, you're not just saving a trip to the store. You're preserving momentum, you're keeping the flow state intact, you're treating your Saturday like it's worth something.
The cost of inaction is another Saturday afternoon in the hardware store parking lot, looking at your phone trying to remember whether you needed the M5x12 or the M5x20.
Start with Tier 1 this weekend. Don't overthink it. The list is specific enough that you can walk into any hardware store, hand it to someone, and walk out with everything you need in 20 minutes.
Now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
In the 1880s, a French naturalist discovered that cuttlefish camouflage patterns produce faint acoustic signatures when the chromatophores expand and contract. Essentially, the animal's skin makes a sound too quiet for human ears, a kind of visual silence that isn't silent at all.
A soundless sound. This has been My Weird Prompts. Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flumingtop. If you want the full Tier 1 shopping list, we'll post it on the website, myweirdprompts.com. Start the inventory this weekend. Your future self, standing in front of a half-finished shelf at 9 p.m. on a Sunday, will thank you.
We'll be back with the deep dives. Until then, label your drawers.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long ear host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.